Hello and welcome to Rogue Cell Radio, a community radio show hosted by two combat veterans who are passionate about helping veterans and fostering community. The show aims to support and celebrate veterans on the North Coast and discuss local issues. I'm your host, Sean Davis.
And I'm Brad Peitzik. I'm the producer of the show.
All right. So today, our guest is Thomas Jenkins, a U.S. Navy veteran who is running for port commissioner. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself or about your service? Let's start with that.
Yeah. So first of all, thanks for inviting me to come and speak to you both. Interestingly enough, I joined the military unofficially in 1983 when I was issued to my dad and our family at Naval Hospital, Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. So they had just built the brand new hospital there, and I was baby number two to go through the labor and delivery ward there.
Say, Jenkins, Thomas, one each.
Yeah, there's a hand receipt somewhere that's unaccounted for. And I grew up 9/11 generation, so I graduated 2001 from high school and kicked around community college for about a year and a half before I went back to the recruiter's office. And I grew up in a Navy family, and being young and somewhat rebellious, decided to join the Air Force initially.
Oh, man.
Oh, so you did a tour in the Air Force first?
Did two full tours, wow. Almost 8 years of active duty. And then when I left active duty to go back to school on GI Bill, I transferred into the Navy and became a reservist for the next 12 years.
So why did you join?
Well, to begin with, it was definitely a family culture. And I'd always grown up in military towns and military communities, and especially being of age during 9/11, I worked an odd job where a lot of the people I worked with had family members who worked either at the nearby Naval base or at Charleston Air Force Base. And so one day, America as we knew it changed.
Mm-hmm.
And besides what you saw on TV or heard on the radio, I saw the very visceral human side of that when people who, you know, just the previous day had been any other work day at the end of summer, beginning of the school year, in tears because they didn't know where their family member was. They just were gone that morning and they were not answering a cell phone. Their car was unattended at a building on base. All the planes were gone.
Mm-hmm.
And so I continue to serve in community college. And then about a year later, the second war erupted in Iraq, and I saw the first live footage of people going up and over the hill in Kuwait for our invasion.
So that's 2003.
2003. And at that point, I realized that the civilian plans I had for higher education were nebulous at best and not very well funded. And seeing live on TV for a second time, my country in a moment of crisis. And that was when I realized, okay, my country needs a lot of people, and I'm part of that lot of people right now. Like, I'm the right age. I know just enough to ask some basic questions when I talk to a recruiter, because I had also thought about a military career in high school, pre-9/11, which was a very different military.
Oh, yeah.
And so I had already been to a recruiter's office, and I went back, bypassed the Naval recruiter and went to the Air Force recruiter over in the same strip mall and just told him, you know, here's my latest test scores for ASVAB. If you need me to retake it, I'm happy to retake it. But I was also told that the scores would be good for a number of years. And I'd like to talk about what my options are.
You said you walked right by the Naval recruiter
mm-hmm.
to the Air Force recruiter, but I've never seen you wear an Air Force hat. And what's the word on your hat right now?
Oh, yeah. I'm definitely a retired sailor, so I have more Navy time than Air Force time. So I joke and say, you know, I managed to beat the curse of the werewolf, and now I'm more squid than pigeon.
Well, it works out well here in Astoria, right?
Do you wear an Air Force hat sometimes?
You know, I have a few of my unit hats that are in my hat rotation, and especially on special holidays like Air Force Birthday, I'll pull them out and you know, or if I'm going to be in an Air Force focused community, it'll be a fun hat to pack for a trip.
So how long were you in total?
Total, 20 and a half years.
Oh, wow.
Oh, so what year was it that you got out?
So I...
The last time.
For the final time, I was retired and honorably discharged August 1st, 2024.
Oh, so wow, not that long ago.
No. Yeah, I was... So we moved out here summer of 2021 for my civilian job as a state employee, and I was still on inactive duty as a reservist and drove up to JBLM once a month, mm-hmm. and then got on a plane 2 weeks a year and flew wherever the Navy said I needed to go, which for that time, mostly down to Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, which, you know, hard.
Poor guy.
No, that's terrible.
That what you say that, but I lived in Schofield Barracks. I was stationed in Schofield Barracks for 3 years. I hardly ever got to see anything other than those gulches.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I was light infantry, though. So
living up in the jungle is quite a bit different than living down on the beach.
Yeah, we never really got time to do that stuff. But yeah, all right. So what made you think about running for public office?
Well, you know, you'd serve the country for however many years you do, whether it's
20 plus here,
1 month, one hitch, or what feels like one entire lifetime. Yeah. And it gets into your bones how much people have supported you along the way, whether they know directly because they see you as a member of their community or their friends or family who understand that you've had a public service or a military service commitment, or simply people who are just going about their lives, paying their taxes, you know, choosing to vote whenever elections come up, looking for other small ways to just be a good citizen. And me being a sailor and being a retired chief petty officer as well, there's a common phrase, and it goes along with a poem that basically says, you owe. So whenever you see something that is not done quite well enough or a job left unfinished, don't pass it by because you owe. And so our community here has really welcomed me and my family. We've gotten to know a lot of friends, both me and my wife, my daughter, who is more of a social butterfly than either the two of us will ever be as a first grader. And I'm sure for many of the same reasons that you and Brad enjoy this area, we're always looking for ways to get more involved and to give back.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, from just talking to you, I could tell duty was just kind of the need to serve, you know, it's just always there for you. I mean, wherever your family, places you lived and everything.
And I think that goes even back to childhood growing up as a military brat. You know, my earliest memories were living in base housing. And then I was about 8 or 9 years old when my dad got ready for his retirement. And we retired into a military community where we still saw military pretty frequently on a routine basis. And so the idea that that's important work, it's a very overt form of service, whereas many people have a much quieter, a much less center of attention way of being involved in their communities or being involved in the work of the country. But it's important. And
I want to talk about the work, and I want to talk about exactly what you're running for. So you're running for Port Commissioner Seat 2. Mm-hmm. What exactly does a Port Commissioner do here in Astoria?
So port districts here in Oregon, not just Astoria, but we have several throughout Oregon. They're special districts, so similar to your water district, your soil and water conservation district. They are public entities that usually have some sort of geographical area that they govern directly in the public's interest. In the case of ports, it's an area where ships come pull up to land and people come off, people go on, cargo comes off, cargo goes on. In the case of our port here also is home to a big commercial fishing fleet. And so mm-hmm. big part of our
tourism,
agriculture, tourism from the cruise ships, yeah. as well as from just private recreation vessels coming up and down the Columbia River.
Oh, yeah, a lot of guides.
Mm-hmm. A lot of guides. We have a lot of people who do non-motorized water tourism, so kayakers, rafters,
And yet we have MERTS, the Clatsop College, that teaches students to work on ships.
Yep, they're a very active program at our community college, teaching people to get ready for jobs in the maritime and shipping industry, as well as doing environmental research so that, you know, even if you spend most of your time on dry land or in hip waders and mud boots, you have an understanding of kind of what is happening in terms of working in and around that area.
So I understand it's a special district, but what do the commissioners do?
So the commissioners would be the equivalent of a city council for the port. And so whenever there are contracts to be reviewed in terms of, do we want to lease space? Do we want to buy or sell property? How do we want to use the money that we're raising and generating as revenue?
Do you choose who might develop a certain space?
So we choose who to make that space available to, and what are the terms that we set for occupying it. We also look at all of the other activities and facilities that are there at the port and have direct oversight as to who and how they'll be used. So, for example, determine that there will be paid parking. If you want to go down there and park your car and you're not a tenant that has parking as part of their lease agreement, okay, you're going to pay a daily fee, or, you know, I think we can pay up to 3 days at a time if you're going to spend a whole weekend down on the waterfront. We work very closely with the city too. So the Riverwalk that goes throughout the entire Astoria Riverfront corridor, we jointly manage that, especially where it crosses through the port at the far.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if it's jointly managed. Yeah. And so before we get to, I want to talk just a little bit more of that, about that. Then we're going to talk about, you know, veterans' role as politicians or get into politics. But do they have some things that are coming up, some events or some different development that's coming up that you really want to be a part of that decision-making process?
Absolutely. So the city and the port jointly approved a waterfront master plan for revitalization and some urban renewal.
How long ago was that?
That was late 2023. So about a year and a half ago, both jurisdictions approved it through the city council as well as the port commission. And it's a 5-year massive infrastructure project. And a lot of that is also
millions of dollars,
depending on millions of dollars of federal grant money that's going to be coming in to help finance it. And similarly, if you've been anywhere down near Pier 39 since about 2018, you'll have seen the area known as the East Mooring Basin between Pier 39 and Safeway. That's also port property, even though it's separated from the main waterfront. And that has been in a state of disrepair. In 2021, it just completely collapsed during one of our first good storms of the year. And so now we have another major project that we need to begin a comprehensive planning process for. And similar to what we did on the west side, I want to make sure that we have a whole community approach to that, because that is a very different part of the waterfront for the community, because a lot of small businesses nearby, as well as a lot of residential areas.
With that new residential affordable housing there behind the Lower Columbia Vet Clinic.
And not to mention the non-human occupants of the port too, the sea lions. You know, those are...
The occasional whale.
The occasional, we do see other whales, harbor seals, other forms of marine life down there. And so we want to make sure that we approach that in a way that's going to take everybody's needs and interests into account, especially those like the animals that can't advocate for themselves, no matter how often they may try to come to a public meeting.
You know, we were down at ABC, Astoria Brewing, and a sea lion just came right up right there where, you know, where the trolley tracks are, and was just checking things out. I thought that was cool. So, I mean, it's really a magical place, the city that we live in, but you're right. I mean, there are other residents other than us, you know.
Well, and the other part of it too is that I see the port as a unique public access to the Columbia River itself. And so similar to how all of Oregon's Pacific-facing beaches are public land and the public has a right to access them and enjoy them, the Columbia River, I see it as a public point of access. But if you just think about the Highway 30 corridor through Clatsop County, there's not very many places where it's easy to directly access the river.
No.
And Clatsop County only has a single port, and it's all the way down here at the mouth of the Columbia River. So if nowhere else, I want to make sure that this is the safest, most accessible, most multiple use area for the public to come down and experience the river.
So if you're just joining us, this is Brad and Sean with Rogue Cell. We're talking with Thomas Jenkins, who is a veteran that is running for Port Commissioner seat number 2.
And we asked Thomas if he wanted to look our questions before we asked him. He's like, no, man, I shoot from the hip.
Shoot from the hip.
So our first gotcha question. No, I'm just kidding. But how has your military experience shaped your approach to leadership and decision-making in public now that you're going into public office?
So in both branches of service that I served, I did the same military occupation, weather forecaster.
Oh, wow.
And so first and foremost, I'm used to the idea that I'm going to have to go somewhere and I'm going to have to speak in public and be the center of attention, at least for a little bit. And the topic that I need deeply, desperately to convey some information about may get very technical if I'm not careful with my words, but is vitally important to the audience that needs to hear it. And more important than what I need to tell them, I need to establish that I'm a credible source of information for them.
What challenges do veterans face when transitioning to civilian roles, and how do those experiences influence your perspective as a public servant?
Well, you know, not all MOSs and not all branches are created equally. Some skills have much more of a direct transfer into civilian occupations than others.
You're sitting across from an infantryman.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel that very much so.
And there's also just the interest of the service member when they make that transition to civilian life. Just because they were particularly talented at something and there may be an outside job equivalent to it doesn't mean that that's going to be the career that they choose for themselves when they suddenly have a massive amount of autonomy.
Yeah.
I would say for me, it was a little bit of wandering professionally, because to be a weather professional outside of the military would require an extremely dense amount of schooling. Not that the GI Bill wasn't there, and not that the opportunities to go to higher ed weren't there, but you know, one of the reasons why I opted for the military to begin with is I only wanted to have to learn just enough math to get by, and praise be to algebra, I never had to go beyond you.
Oh, man, you're hurting this mathematician.
Oh, my gosh, you're killing me.
Can you share a moment from your service that continues to inspire or guide you in what you're doing today?
Yeah, absolutely. And apologies up front if this gets a little bit intense for me emotionally, but my third deployment, it was a year long obligation. So I initially volunteered to do 6 months, but once as a reservist, once you have activated yourself, the needs of
those choices kind of go away.
Yeah. They're like, oh, you are this particular shape and this particular length. We have a job just for you. And so my 6 month voluntary deployment became a 1 year mobilization. And
to where?
Well, I went to, at the time, it was Fort Bragg. Now it's a different Fort Bragg than the one I went to, but Joint Special Operations Command.
Oh, yeah. They just changed it. Like, it's still Fort Bragg. We just
but it's didn't a name different it Bragg.
After the Confederate Bragg. We're going to name it after this other Bragg.
I see it as a Liberty sandwich on Bragg bread. That's all it is. Yeah. But I went to serve with them in North Carolina for a year, and up front, they needed me to go to Afghanistan for at least a few months to relieve somebody there. And so I spent from about Memorial Day weekend 2016 through 9/11, ironically, in Afghanistan, and then flew back to North Carolina for about 2 to 3 months of decompression time before my next forward deployment. And the moment I want to bring up is on that second forward deployment, I went down the week before Christmas and I wintered over on the Horn of Africa in Djibouti. And talk about being in a place that certainly doesn't match the season in all aspects that you would understand it. And having the opportunity to go down, first and foremost, I'd never been to Africa. And so that was going to be the adventure of a lifetime, no matter what happened. But having worked with the active duty troops and a number of National Guard and Reserve and civil servants from national security, national defense backgrounds. And at that point, I had been with them for a little over 7-8 months. We had just survived Hurricane Matthew striking directly up the Cape Fear watershed there in eastern North Carolina. And they asked me, like, hey, I mean, it's been gnarly in Afghanistan. It was supposed to be calm back here in the States, and it was gnarly, and you had to deal with the hurricane. Would you be able to go relieve somebody down in Africa so they can come home for Christmas? And I was like, absolutely. Like, you know, send me down there. One, I'm on your dime until April of the following year, so I got to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm feeling a little restless living out of a hotel. Like, I need to go somewhere. And what better gift to give a fellow service member than the opportunity to go home early for Christmas?
Oh, yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's definitely great.
You're entering public service again, at least you're intending to. What advice would you give to any other veterans that are wanting to make a transition back into public service?
Well, I would say take all of the things that you wish you had asked your recruiter and go find somebody who has gone into public service, whether they're a veteran or not, and just ask them some simple, honest, silly questions. There's no such thing as a dumb question, and I challenge you to try to find one. But the things I didn't know have been some of the easiest to overcome because they're not the hardest problems in the world I've been challenged to solve. I'm really grateful for the community that I found out here, because once I announced my intention, dozens of people came out, even if only to say, hey, good for you, thanks for doing that. And some who have chosen to get very involved and have been very vocal supporters. And, you know, running this thing on a shoestring and scotch tape budget, but we're making it happen.
Yeah. So how do you connect with the other veterans in the community here on the North Coast?
Well, I've been fortunate enough to see that the Elks Lodge has started to offer a coffee meeting once a week, which is an awesome way to just kind of have an open invitation to sit down and to meet other folks in the community.
And that's where we started talking with you and realized you were running for this office and thought you should be on Rogue Cell for an episode.
Yeah.
And I've been fortunate enough, I have a number of neighbors in my community just up Youngs River who are also either military veterans themselves or have military in their family currently. So we've got a National Guardsman who also works over at Camp Rylea, who's one of my really good neighbors. In fact, came over and was helping us diagnose a car issue over the weekend. And we've got friends that we've met through other community organizations or, you know, my daughter is friends with a kid who's in a Coast Guard family out here. And so we've gotten a chance to meet their parents. And, you know, my wife met a Coast Guard family through a book club that she joined here a number of years ago, shortly after we moved to the community. So it's been not one way, but it's been many different ways. And I think that's also really kind of helped highlight how diverse, even in a small community, the military presences.
Well, I have no doubt that you feel, because that support kind of goes both ways. So they all come out, they want to support you, but all now I'm sure you have like a sense of responsibility or obligation to do a good job, right? I mean, yeah. How does it help shape your priorities?
I think it really brings them into focus, and not just for the people who live here in the community too, because, you know, I don't only want to get elected and do a good job, but I want to make sure that our port is the best little port on the whole Columbia River. We also frequently play a host to passing military vessels that come up and down the Columbia River, because we've got a major shipyard in the Portland area where they often go.
We have a big visit coming.
Oh,
pretty
yeah.
Quick here, well, don't
every,
we?
Every Rose Festival, yeah.
Rose Festival comes with Fleet Week every yeah. year. And
but also that the ship Mercy, the hospital ship comes through here
yeah.
a couple times.
And then too. My ignorance, but what's the Coast Guard ship that comes through, that is coming through?
So this year we have a special Coast Guard vessel that's coming. So the Coast Guard still has a masted tall ship that they originally...
Like
sails and everything.
Wow.
It's a former German naval vessel that was taken as a prize at the end of one of the many earlier conflicts.
So this is an old ship.
Old ship. Not quite as old as USS Constitution, but still pretty
pristine. It's beautiful.
Pristine.
I think they make Coast Guard officers in their academy.
Yeah,
so actually man it for a little bit.
This is the U.S. Coast Guard cutter Beagle. It is moored at the U.S. Coast Guard Academy, and it's part of their academic course of instruction. But as far as I understand, this is her first Columbia River deployment. She's going to be coming here right around the Rose Festival and Fleet Week.
Oh, wow.
And she's going to be making a stop at the Port of Astoria. So let me start with where you can find me. So digitally, you can find me on Facebook. So I have a Facebook page, Thomas Jenkins for Port of Astoria. I also have a campaign Instagram, at Jenkins for public office.
Is it the number four?
Number four. I'm trying to help build a port that works for everyone. And some of that's going to be very economically dependent on the jobs and the actual workers, like the longshoremen and the fishermen that are down at the port every day. Some of that is going to be the other smaller businesses and private creators and crafters who are part of our developing hospitality and tourism scene and our art and creative expression scene out here. And like I said, I want this to be the safest, most accessible point for people to just come and enjoy the river. You know, whether you're getting on the river, you want to just walk by it, you want to take pictures of the birds and the sea lions, there's something there for everybody.
So thank you for listening to Rogue Cell Radio. If you're a veteran or you know a veteran and you have questions for us, please reach out. We're always, usually every Thursday, we're at the Elks Lodge drinking coffee from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. And that's Post 180 Elks Lodge.
And that's a free coffee for veterans.
Yes. A lot of times Ralph brings some quiche.
I've heard the quiche. You
and
go
Peg
for
is
it.
Amazing. And a lot of good snacks and coffee. Or you can just email us. My email is sean@roguecell.org. That's sean@roguecell.org. Or you can get a hold of Brad at brad@roguecell.org.
If you or someone you know is struggling or in crisis, help is available. Call or text our national suicide line at 988. A specific line is set aside for veterans if you press 1.
We'll talk to you again next month on the fourth Thursday. Thank you all so much for listening. And as always, Charlie Mike, continue mission.
The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of Together with Veterans Northwest Oregon or the Oregon Firearm Safety Coalition or the Department of Veterans Affairs. You can find us at roguecell.vet or facebook.com/groups/roguecell. If you or a loved one is experiencing thoughts of suicide, help is available. Please call 988 and press 1 for veterans. This line is answered 24/7, so there is always someone to help. And with help comes hope, and hope saves lives. The second of the 503rd Rogue Cell is produced by Brad Peitzig with support from Together with Veterans and is hosted by Sean Davis. Thank you for joining us.